We are just delighted that you are here, and I want you to know that in 2 weeks, believe it or not, just 2 weeks, Easter's here. And so I've got an idea. I'm going to give you a little challenge, and I really think, you know, we're not having a big guest this year. We're not having, we're not even having a guest the week after Easter, which we normally do. And it's not that we didn't try. Some people just don't like coming to Fresno, but all I can say is we're going to save a little money this year. That's good too, right? And but you know, Jesus is really the highlight of this season. And what we'd really like for you to do is a simple process of A, writing down somebody's name that you know does not know the Lord. And it shouldn't take you a long time to do that. You probably can think of about 300 people right off the bat. But write down one of their names, number one. Number two, pray for them. You have 14 days. You could pray for them every single day. Number three, invite them to church. And number four, pray for them some more. So that's the strategy, okay? You ready? I'm going to give it to you again. Write down somebody's name who doesn't know the Lord. Invite them to Cross City on Easter weekend. We have a lot of stuff planned. We have a Good Friday service, and it's a big weekend, and it's going to be crowded. Get here early, get a good parking spot, but invite them to come with you, and then continue to pray for them. And if you're courageous enough, you could take them out to eat or something afterwards. I'm just telling you, it would make the world a difference. Don't you know that the Lord wants your friend to know Him more than you do? And you say, I'm not comfortable doing this. Let's put it in His hands. Let's ask Him to do something. And if you'll put that on the line, I believe some good things are really gonna happen that weekend. I'm excited for it. 2 weeks, I can't believe it's here. We've been talking about This Is Us. In the first part of the series, we talked about who we are, what we believe. And the second part of the series, we talked about what that means in our relationships, how that plays out in our family and our friends and all of that. And I told a couple of marriage jokes last week. You all loved them. I was so delighted you love my humor. But not really. I mean, this didn't make the cuts. And it's not really that funny. I know some of you are stunned that there's stuff that doesn't make the cut. I mean, right? You think I just throw every... No, there's always stuff on the editing room floor every week. And this was a cut from last week. And I don't want to put it in the vault, so I just wanted to show it. Well, maybe that's why it didn't make the cut. I don't know. Well, I believe that friendship is the key to every relationship. I believe it's the key to a growing church. I believe it's the key to almost everything in our culture. It really shapes just about every decision that we make in life. It, where we go, where we hang out, which sport we're going to follow, the hobbies we pursue, and what church we attend. What are our friends doing? Where are they? What are they up to? Where do they go? I want to be with them. I believe that is perhaps the biggest factor among all. For 10 years, the most popular television show on the air was a show called Friends. And I recently saw some 20-something who just discovered Friends, and they were on Facebook telling everybody how great it was. I thought that was kind of cute. But when it was in its prime, there were 30 million people who would tune in on a Thursday night to watch. For example, the series that we've stolen the title from, This Is Us, they have about 10 million per week. Friends had $30 million per week. And my question, you know, I'm thinking of this $30 million, and This Is Us did have about $30 million the week after the Super Bowl, right following the Super Bowl, but they're averaging about $10 million. But those $10 million and the $30 million that watch Friends every single week, my question is, my thought is, how many of those $30 million people are in their bedroom or their living room, and they're all alone, and they're really watching, and they're saying to themselves, man, I wish I had some friends like that. That's what I want. I would love to be in that kind of a little clique, that kind of a family, that kind of a circle. I really wish I had some friends like that. Well, I want to tell you, this book will teach you how to build strong relationships. This is the book with all of the answers. This is the book that has everything that you need. And this book, I believe, leans towards teaching us that this is why we need to be in a small group. This is why we need to be in a life group. Because it's in those groups that we find acceptance, that we find forgiveness, that we find prayer, that we find understanding, support, camaraderie. Some folks don't even know that's what they're after in life. But the basic instruction manual says this: to be a friend, to have a friend, you must be a friend. And I want you to know something today. Ecclesiastes chapter 4, verse 9. Ecclesiastes, that again is in the Old Testament, right there in the middle. We looked at Song of Solomon last week. And I have a big outline, and I'm going to try to get through it as best I can. But friendship, number one, is a great investment. Ecclesiastes chapter 4, verse 9. Hold your Bible up if you have one. Just, I know you're not looking in it, but just hold it up so I can feel like I'm doing something right. Okay, two are better than one, because they have a good return for their work. The word return means you've made an investment and you're getting something back. We call it a dividend. Can I say the biggest dividend you're ever going to get in life is when you invest in friendship, when you invest in relationships. Some people in life, they're after things. They're after possessions. Yeah, I have a house, but I want a bigger house. I have a house and an apartment, but I'd like a house up in Shaver. I have a lot of things, but I need more things. I know I can't get into my closet, but I must have more things because that's where I'm going to find happiness. In fact, I've got a couple of storage places down there at Darrell's, and I just love to go down there and look at all of my things. I just want to tell you, if that's what you're after in life, more possessions, more stuff, you are never going to be totally happy. You are never going to be fulfilled. But if, on the other hand, you're going through life and you say to yourself, I don't want to focus on things. I want to focus on relationships. I want to focus on my friends. I want to have strong relationships in my family and outside my family. You have a great chance of being truly fulfilled in this life. There are three characteristics of a true friend. Number one, a true friend helps you when you're down. Look at that scripture. If one falls down, his friend can help him up. Let's read that together. Okay, you ready? Because last week was the week that we lost the hour of sleep, right? It's not this week, right? Okay, just checking. Here we go. If one falls down, his friend can help him up. Now, that's what a true friend does. And by the way, we all fall down. We all mess up. None of us are perfect. And we all have what we think are friends, but you know how to tell the difference between a friend and a non-friend? I call them acquaintances. We all have acquaintances, and sometimes we make that terrible mistake of thinking those acquaintances are our friends. But you can tell the difference between a friend and an acquaintance when you fall down and you mess up. Because your acquaintances, guess what they're going to do? Zoom. They're going to be out of your life so quick. But your friend is going to come along and help you up. Oh, I hope you sense the difference. I hope you get what I'm talking about here today. We all need friends. Somebody said a friend is somebody who walks in when the whole world walks out. That's why they're rare. That's why they're valuable. That's why gold is valuable. It's rare. That's why diamonds are valuable, because they're rare. And they're also pretty, but they're rare. Friends, true friends, friendship When you're in trouble and somebody comes along to help you, I want to tell you that's rare. You can call somebody at 2 or 3 or 4 in the morning and they're not going to say, "What are you doing, man? I'm trying to get some sleep." You say, "Man, I'm in trouble and I need you." And they're going to say, "Where are you? I'm on my way. I gotta get these PJs off and I got to put some shorts on and I'll be right there." You're in jail. Somebody said on the way out, "Hey, if I'm in jail, can I call you?" I said, "Yeah, go ahead." A real friend provides warmth, let her be, in a cold, cruel world. If two lie down together, they will keep warm. If you gain strength and warmth from a real friend. And we're talking about family. We're talking about relationships. It applies to both husband and wife and to just friendships. I believe in a marriage, as we've mentioned, you need to be best friends with your mate. And gentlemen, I just want to throw this in here. If you have a good old buddy of yours who is infringing on your relationship with your wife, just because your friendship is so great, you need to make sure you're prioritizing this stuff. You need to make sure that your wife is your absolute best friend and that everybody's clear about it. And the same goes for you gals. You have a girlfriend over here, wonderful. But make sure your best friend is your mate. Draw strength from one another. Somebody said it's like a gauge. You know, it's like an emotional gas gauge on our heart, you know, our lives. There's this gauge, and it's empty or it's full. And it's telling the emotional status of your life. And there are some people you hang around and that you love them and they're kind of funny and man, they're not like bad people, but when you're finished with them, that emotional gas tank is always on E. There are other people and you're around them and you leave them and you 30 minutes, an hour, your emotional gas tank is always on full. You have to have some wisdom in discerning who you're going to spend your time with. You got to figure that out. Because a good friend is like a good warm fire on a cold night. Man, they give you what you need. They fill that emotional gas tank up. And an acquaintance, somebody that's just looking for something out of you, they're gonna usually drain that tank. You're gonna end up on empty. A real friend is someone, let her see, who fights to protect you. I love this line. Though one may be overpowered, two can defend themselves. That's an old military strategy in the ancient world. Before guns, most battles were fought with hand-to-hand combat. And they would go into war with a buddy. And you've ever watched some of those old movies like Spartacus? They would go in there back-to-back. And no matter where the enemy came, they would have the other person's back. I think today we say something like, "I got your six." But back then, it was the old buddy system. I mean, you'd be back-to-back. No matter where the enemy came, you always had your partner's back. That's what friends do. Friends don't stab you in the back. Friends protect your back. And I get it. Most of us are not being physically attacked today. And it's not like we're running out in the field with knife with somebody, you know. But we are being verbally attacked today. Emotionally attacked and spiritually attacked. And can I just tell you what a real friend does? A real friend will not put up with that thing we call gossip. And you say, "What's gossip?" Gossip is when you say something about somebody and it's not kind and it's negative. And you say, "Oh, you mean when they say something untrue about you?" No, it can even be true. But if it's not building you up, it's still gossip. And a real friend, when they hear that, here's what a real friend does. They're talking about your friend, and somebody comes along, and they're saying, "Hey, did you hear this?" A real friend says, wait just a second. You don't say that about my friend. This isn't a place where that can be received. It's just not going to happen. True or not, keep it to yourself. I tell people this all the time. That may be the most awkward line you'll ever share with somebody, but I promise you, with that person, you'll only have to do it once. Because they'll know you are that person's friend, and that just is not acceptable. And we've all done it. And we've all been victims of it. And yes, the Bible calls it a sin. But a true friend says, hey, not here. And I know there are people in this room and you're thinking, I wish I had a friend like that. And I will tell you again, to have friends, you must be a friend. The book of Proverbs says that if a man were to have friends, he must show himself friendly. The poet wrote, I went out to find a friend, and I found none out there. Where are they? But I went out to be a friend, and friends were everywhere. Maybe you're here today and you're feeling a little sorry for yourself, saying, I wish I had some friends like that. Well, here's how you get friends like that. You get out there and you be a friend like that to somebody. The second point in your notes, I have this written down about friendship, and that is the best friends are family. And you can flip that around if you want. And we're talking about family, I'm talking about any kind of relationship, your husband, wife, children, parents, brothers, sisters. But I'm also talking about us in here today. I'm talking about the family of God. And the key is, you may need some friends and you don't know where to find them. And I tell people this all the time and they kind of giggle a little bit like you're probably going to. But the best place to find friends in the whole wide world is Cross City Christian Church. Now there are places you can go and you can find what you call friends. I'll call them acquaintances. But if you're looking for the kind of friends described in this instruction manual, the best place to look is in the family of faith. The best place to look is at church. The best place to look would be in a life group. You say, I was in a life group, I didn't like it. That's fine. I was in one, I didn't like it either. But you get into a different one. You find one that you do like. You spend time, you take time and invest. And I promise you, in the course of months or even a year or two, you will find a group and a family that you will love being a part of. Yeah, I wrote this down. I love it. You should treat your guest like family and your family like guest. I mean, when we were little, I mean, our parents would say, you know, be nice, do this. When you go over here, show your manners, right? Do this. And, you know, I mean, I don't know if they still do that today, but when I was a kid, my parents insisted on stuff like that. And I would just say, you should do that today. You should do that in your own home. Did you ever have a relative? Like, I had a brother once who'd go down the street, and he would, you know, we had a big family, and sometimes it was kind of wild. And so he would go, and it was kind of a safe place for him. And there were these elderly twins, ladies, and they were probably in their 60s, and he would go down there as a teenager and kind of hang out with them. It was kind of his safe place. And I mean, they would brag on him and say, what a wonderful kid he is. That's fantastic. Yeah. And, you know, and then he would come home and act like Satan. And there was always this dialogue between my parents and him. I wish you would treat us like you treat them. Well, I wish you'd treat me like they treat me. You know, and I mean, it was why don't you treat your family like you treat your guests? And why don't you treat your guests like you treat your family? I tell guys all the time, you remember when you were first dating and how kind you were, and you would open the car door and you treated her or him special. Are you still doing that? Remember when you talked to each other? Remember when you would listen. Remember when you would pay attention. Remember when you would look into her eyes and nod as if you were actually hearing and responding to what she was saying. The good old days. Put the phone down. Put the newspaper down. Treat your family as guests and your guests like family. Now, there are some gifts everybody ought to give their friends, or if you want to say family members. Here's number one. You ought to give your friends the gift of kindness. Just be kind to them. I know I've talked a lot about this lately, but kindness is love in work clothes. It is love applied to everyday life. People don't believe this, but years ago in the early 90s, there was a 900 number. I think it was based out of New York City, and it was 1-900 Kind word is how it was advertised. And what it was just it's back when 900 numbers were big because they would make money off of them, sometimes $5 a minute. This particular 900 number was a number you could call, and they would compliment you. They would say nice things about you. You would, I mean, it costs $3.95 a minute back then. Technology's blown all this out of the water today. But for $3.95, you could call an anonymous, somebody who's never seen you, somebody who doesn't know you, and they never will know you, but they'll tell you how nice you look today. They will tell you that you're a wonderful person and you can do it. Great things are going to happen. You say, well, nobody would call that number. Thousands of people called that number in its prime for $3.95 a minute. What does it tell you? People are hungry to hear kind things. I sometimes feel like when I try to do something nice or say something nice to somebody, when I turn away, I kind of say to myself, $3.95. The second gift is the gift of encouragement. You kids have never heard this song. We used to sing it in school. I think it was mandatory for about 100 years. It's outlawed now. But they used to sing Home, Home on the Range, where seldom is heard a discouraging word. They all know it. I just think, wouldn't that be great if that were really true in our homes and in our schools and at our workplace and in our church? Oh, that'd be awesome. If we were just the people who saw the good in one another and built each other up, we used words that would build instead of tear down. One of my favorite passages in Hebrews chapter 10, verse 24, it says that we should consider how we may spur one another on. I wish you had a pen or a pencil so you could underline some of these words. My problem is I don't know which words to underline because I love every single one of them. How we may spur one another on towards love and good deeds. Let us encourage one another. Oh, man. I'd underline that. And then it says, don't get out of the habit of coming together as some are in the habit of doing. That means we should get in a good habit of going to church. Everything that might be wrong with the church, it's better to be in the habit of going to church than to be in the habit of not going to church. Let's not give that up. Let's get in the habit of going to church and meeting with one another. Because it's there where we encourage one another. It's there that we lift one another up. Let's not get out of that habit. And let us encourage one another. Then it says, even more as you see the day approaching. If there ever was a time and if there ever was a moment in the history of this world that we should get in the habit of going to church, it's now. Because I'm telling you, friend, Jesus is coming back. This world is falling apart. And we may have some days of rebound and we may have some days where everything seems like it's going to get a lot better. But I'm just telling you, it is slowly and surely it is coming to an end. And the Lord is going to come back. And the Bible says, as you see that day approaching, you should meet, you should get together more and more and more. And the thing you ought to do when you get together is not discourage one another, but encourage one another. Recently read about a deal in San Diego. There was a guy wandering around in the marina there, and he was looking at all these beautiful yachts, and he saw this poster where a guy was going to set sail, and he was going to go around the whole globe. And that had been done before with some other people, but he was fascinated by the whole thing, and he went down to the end of one of these docks, and there was a group of people there gathered, and he could tell this was the boat, this was the people, this is what was going to happen, but he was amazed because all the people gathered around there, they must have been family, he said, because they were all saying negative things. They were all telling this guy, you can't do it. This boat's too little. You're going to die out there in the storm. You don't have enough food. You don't have enough water. You don't have enough peanut butter. You're not going to make it. And it was obvious he was going to try anyway, and it was obvious that his heart was broken, that the people nearest and dearest to him were not saying anything positive. And so this stranger, as he pushed away from the dock, this total stranger telling this story, he ran to the end of the dock, having met this guy before, and walked to the end of that pier, and in front of all of those people said, you can do it! Hey, we want you to know that we love you! You're going to make it. You're going to do it. This is awesome. You're going to do a great job. Bon voyage. And that guy out there in that sailboat with a big smile, lifting that sail. And sure enough, a few months later, he made it all the way around the globe. I believe with all of my heart that there are two groups of people at the end of every pier and at the end of every dock. There are discouragers and there are encouragers. I just want to ask you, what group are you in? Who do you talk to every day? Who are you standing with? Those that encourage or those that don't? That's what friends need. They need encouragement. And then the third gift is the gift of honesty. And this isn't easy, but it is a true characteristic of what a real friend does. Proverbs 27, verse 6, wounds from a friend can be trusted, but an enemy multiplies kisses. Oh, this is interesting, strange, and I can explain it. That's what makes it good to me. Let's take the last part first. An enemy multiplies kisses. What does that mean? That means there are people in your life. Today we use the term, they will kiss up to you. What does that mean? That means they will be your friend. Oh, yeah. No kidding. Why? Because they're going to get something out of you. It pays for them to be your friend. And so guess what? They're your friend. By the way, that's what happened to Jesus there in the Garden of Gethsemane the night before he was crucified. Judas went over there and planted a kiss right on his cheek. And Jesus, knowing what was going on, said, "Friend, you betray me with a kiss?" But that first part of that verse says, wounds from a friend can be trusted. Now that's pretty strange. What in the world does that mean? Well, listen. I believe that in this strange day that we're living in, the best thing you can do for your friend is, yes, be kind and sweet and encouraging, but you must be honest. And if you have a friend that is doing something that is taking them down a road of self-destruction, you must stand up and you must speak to that person eyeball to eyeball and say, "Friend, you're about to make the mistake of your life." And if you don't do that, men, women, you got a guy, you got a friend, got a gal, got a girlfriend, and they're doing something taking them away from God. They're doing something on the verge of self-destruction, and you don't say anything about what they're doing. You don't say anything about their immorality. You don't say anything about their illegality. You don't say anything about that, friend. Whatever you are, you're not really a friend. You're not really a friend, because a true friend is going to say, "Hey, if you keep doing this, you are going to ruin your life." And you say, "Well, that might hurt her. That might hurt him. That might cut him. That might wound him." Yes, the wounds of a friend can be trusted. I've had people tell me things about my life, and I knew when they were telling me, with a little smirk on the end of their lips, that they were telling it to me because they wanted to tear me down. And I've had people tell me things that were tough to hear because they wanted me to live a better life. There's such a difference. My prayer is that you would give the gift of honesty. Someone said, "People are often unreasonable, illogical, and self-centered. Forgive them anyway. If you're kind, people may accuse you of selfish, ulterior motives. Be kind anyway. If you're successful, you will win some false friends and some true enemies, but succeed anyway. If you're honest and frank, people may cheat you, but be honest anyway. You spend your years building, someone could destroy it all overnight, but build anyway. If you find serenity and happiness, well, there's folks going to be jealous, but be happy anyway. The good you do today, people may Forget tomorrow, but do good anyway. Give the world the best you have, and it may never be enough. Give the world the best you have anyway. You see, in the final analysis, why is this important? Because in the final analysis, it's really between you and God. It's never between you and them. It's always between you and God. Have you ever thought about that? The way that you relate to people down here like this determines how you relate to your Creator. And the way that you relate to Him determines how you relate to other people. You got time for one more? Number three in your notes. Here's the best part. Let Jesus be your best friend. Let Jesus be your best friend. John 15:15, I no longer call you servants, Jesus said, because a servant does not know his master's business. Instead, he says, I'm going to call you friends. Are you listening to this today? Everything that I learned from my Father, I have made known to you. I want to tell you that is powerful stuff. Write these down quickly. First of all, He knows you better than anyone else. He knows you better than anyone else. Jesus knows every mistake you've ever made. Think about it. I don't know every mistake you've ever made, but He does. And He knows every mistake I've ever made. You don't know every mistake I've made. You may think you do, but you don't. But He does. And He says, David, guess what? Even though I know all that stuff, I want to be your best friend. We think Jesus, when He was down here, He was friends with all of the religious leaders, and you know, they called Him teacher and rabbi, so He was probably friends with all the other teachers and rabbis and Sadducees and Pharisees. Oh, no, 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 no. Those are the people Jesus called names. The meanest things Jesus ever said was about religious people. He called them hypocrites and a bunch of snakes one time. Matthew chapter 11, when they talked about Jesus, they said, you know this Jesus guy, He's a friend of sinners and tax collectors. And everybody in this room ought to throw both hands over your head, and you ought to be shouting glory hallelujah, because every single one of us are in that category. And Jesus said, I'm your friend. I'm going to hang out with you. I'm going to hang out with the drunkard. I'm going to hang out with the prostitute. That's my circle. That's who I'm going to love on. That's who I'm going to reach out to. That's who I'm going to forgive. Letter B, He's done more for you than anyone else. You say, well, what did He do? Well, we don't have enough hours left in our lives to describe everything He's done. But the Bible says there's no greater love than this, than He laid down His life. A man laid down his life for his friends. And that's what He did for you. He laid down His life for you. Knowing everything, you say, well, He died before I did all the bad stuff. He knew everything you were going to do. Let's put it that way. The American Indian, they don't have a lot of words for a lot of words we use. And so sometimes they would have a phrase for that would describe one word. That's how their language works. And they don't have a word for friend, but they have a phrase. And the phrase is, He who carries my sorrows on His back. They nailed that one. That's what the Bible says He literally did for us. Isaiah says He took all of our sin, He took all of our sorrows, and He bore them on the cross. He died for you. And finally, He is always there when you need Him, like James Taylor used to sing. If you ever need Him, you just call out His name. Just give Him a call. He'll be there. He'll come running. He'll be knocking at your door. In fact, the book of Revelation, we read these words. Jesus said, "Here I am. I stand at the door and knock. I'm right here." You're here today and you say, "I wish I had a friend like that." He's right here. He just wants you to open that door and let him come in. He wants to have a meal with you. You may want to change some of the furniture, but he wants to come in and live with you and love you. He's saying, "Let me come into your life." You do need a friend, and that's me. But you got to open that door. One day, Mary, Martha, and Lazarus, you know the story. Lazarus had died. They had sent for Jesus, but for some reason he delayed. It was a mystery. They didn't understand it, and there's really no reason given in the Bible except Jesus kind of just did it on purpose. He said, "Yeah, I got the message, thanks. No thanks." And in his own time, he showed up. And these gals came out, and they were weeping and crying and belly aching, and boy, they were honest. They said, "Jesus, here's what a good friend." You know, they were good friends. These were his close friends. You know they're friends because she came out and said, "If you'd been here, my brother would still be alive." "Where have you been? Now he's dead and rotten over here in the grave." Terrific. Jesus knew exactly what he was going to do. Jesus knew that he was getting ready to bound out of that tomb. Jesus knew he was getting ready to say, "Lazarus, come forth," and everything was going to be okay. But his friends were crying. And that little verse, I think verse 35, it says, Jesus wept. When he saw his friends weeping, he wept. He had delayed because he knew he was going to bring about this great miracle, but he still was touched by their hurt and their pain. And some of you are here today and you're thinking, "Well, if he's my best friend, why am I going through all this?" Well, maybe he's trying to work on you a little bit. Maybe his agenda is a little more important than yours. Maybe he's trying to rearrange some of the furniture in your life and in your heart. You think you've got everything figured out, and he's just trying to create a little more room so he can come in and share a meal with you and share a life with you. Sometimes it has to hurt, like a surgeon who has to make an incision. There's a little pain in there. It actually creates a wound so that he can put something in or take something out and make something better for your life. That's what sometimes I believe the Lord is trying to do. I think sometimes the things we don't understand, I just trust and believe that he is up to something. But I want you to know today, he is standing at the door and he is knocking right now. And he's wondering if you'll let him in. He's the friend you need. He's the one true friend. He's there to help. He's there to pick you up when you fall down. He's there to protect your back when others are attacking. He's there to forgive. He's the true family member. He's the one that shows kindness at all times. He's the one that encourages. He's the one that's honest. Sometimes we don't even want to hear it. He's so honest. But he's honest. He'll tell you. He's known everything you've ever done or ever will do. Loves you more than anybody else. Done more for you than anybody else. And he'll always be there for you. Friend, if you have not let Jesus come into your heart and life, you've not given him that chance to be your best friend, I want to invite you to do that today. Don't pass this opportunity up. He's knocking on your heart's door. Will you let him in? Maybe you need to join this church. Maybe you need to be baptized. Or if there's any other decision to make, make it now as we stand and as we sing right now together.